Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to DSM's conference call on the full year results of 2015. Throughout today's presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and after the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To register for questions, you may dial star one at any time. If any participant has difficulty in hearing the conference, please press zero zero on your push-button phone. Now I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Huizing. Please go ahead, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and welcome to this conference call on the fourth quarter and full year 2015 results that we published earlier this morning. I'm sitting here with Mr. Feike Sijbesma, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of the DSM Managing Board, Ms. Geraldine Matchett, Chief Financial Officer and member of the DSM Managing Board, and Mr. Jos op Heij, Senior Vice President, Group Controller. They will elaborate on the results and after that be able to answer your questions. As a reminder, today's presentation may contain forward-looking statements. In that regard, I would like to direct you to the disclaimers about forward-looking statements as published in the press release and on our websites. With that being said, I will hand over to Mrs. Matchett. Geraldine, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this call on DSM's quarter four and full year results. Before we start the Q&A session, I will walk you through some of the key slides of our investor presentation that we published this morning together with the press release, and it's available on our website as well as on our investor relations app. Now let me start on page two. As you can see from these financial highlights, DSM delivered an encouraging fourth quarter with both sales and EBITDA slightly ahead of expectations and a strong operating cash flow of 313 million. We're particularly pleased with the strong organic growth that we achieved in animal and in human nutrition and the good EBITDA results of performance materials. Nutrition EBITDA was up 3% despite the negative impact of lower vitamin E prices, and if we adjust for a scheduled maintenance shutdown, the EBITDA margin for nutrition in Q4 would have been slightly above 17%. This good progress in Q4 completes a solid year with group sales reaching 7.722 billion and an EBITDA up 4% to 1.075 billion, despite the known headwinds of the lower vitamin E prices and the strong Swiss franc. Looking forward, we believe that we will continue to make progress both in nutrition and performance materials, as described at our Capital Markets Day in November, although macroeconomic conditions do remain challenging. We expect to deliver improved profitability and returns underpinned by the self-help programs. As a result, our outlook for 2016 remains fully in line with the EBITDA and ROCE targets that we set out in our Strategy 2018, driving profitable growth. To close 2015, we propose a stable dividend of 1.65 euro per share. Now, these were the main highlights, and let me run you through some more slides to give you a bit of additional color on our Q4 performance, and I'll start on slide 10, which is the animal nutrition slide. I'll give you a second to get there. As already mentioned, sales growth remains strong in Q4 for animal nutrition. As you can see here, the 9% organic growth is made up of 7% volume growth and 2% price mix. The volume growth was driven mainly by our premix business and specialty products, helped by the timing of some orders. As in previous quarters, price mix effects remained positive for the top line despite the low vitamin E prices, but vitamin E did have a negative impact on the EBITDA in Q4 of 25 million, leading to a total full-year negative impact of around 100 million. On a regional basis, Europe and Latin America, including Tortuga, performed well, whereas Asia was slightly weaker. Now, if we have a look at human nutrition, we move to slide 12. Here you can see that human nutrition has also delivered a strong organic growth contrary to prior quarters, and this was achieved against the backdrop of ongoing weak conditions in the U.S. and Latin American markets. The organic growth reached 5%, made up of a 7% volume growth and partly offset by a small 2% price mix decline, while the currencies had a positive effect of 9%. While it is fair to highlight that this year-on-year growth is, of course, helped partly by easier comparative figures, this good performance is nonetheless also a result of stronger sales in the food and beverage segment in Europe and Asia, as well as improved sales in the U.S. market in both fish oil and vitamin-based supplements, and another strong quarter for iHealth, our B2C business, with a double-digit sales growth. Now, for performance materials, we move to slide 14. Performance materials closed a strong year 2015 with an EBITDA increase in Q4 of 13%, leading to a full-year EBITDA increase of 19% versus last year. This was achieved through a combination of three positive effects: efficiency and cost-saving programs that we completed in recent years, the temporary benefit of the lower input costs only partially passed through the value chain, and a favorable foreign exchange mix. In terms of EBITDA margin, the materials cluster closes the year at 15.2%, up from the 13.1% of last year, with an EBITDA margin in Q4 of 15%, which is only slightly below previous quarters. In terms of top-line development, as shown on slide 13, volumes in Q4 ended slightly down at minus 1%, despite an improved momentum towards the end of the quarter, while the price mix variance was minus 7, reflecting the lower input costs. And a positive contribution came from the currencies with a plus 5%. Within the cluster, engineering plastic volumes were up mainly due to good performance in compounds and specialty products, while resins and Dyneema delivered weaker sales, although we do continue to see positive momentum in the transition towards more sustainable waterborne resins and in Dyneema's life protection solutions. If we now move to slide 17, I will briefly comment on our joint ventures and associates. So slide 17. As you know, for our main joint ventures, we're no more in the driver's seat, and as a minority shareholder, we're not in a position to provide very detailed comments. However, we are pleased to report continued improved results in DSM Sinochem Pharmaceuticals, as well as a solid result in Patheon, which we formerly reported under the name DPX, supported by both organic growth and the contribution of new acquisitions. However, for the newly created Chemica Invest, results in Q4 continue to be impacted by weakness in caprolactam. Now, regarding the potential IPO process of Patheon, we are not allowed to comment, and we refer you directly to the documentation provided by the company itself. I will now move to slide 18 for a quick overview of our cash generation. So, page 18. As mentioned in previous reporting periods, we have been actively working on our cash generation and are encouraged by the progress that we made, particularly this quarter. Full-year operating cash flow from continuing operations amounted to 800 million compared to 666 million in 2014. When looking at total cash from operating activities, including discontinued operation, that closes the year at 696 million. As announced during our Capital Markets Day, in order to align our external reporting with common practice, we now provide DSM's total working capital status, and that's what you see in this graph here on this slide, as opposed to the previously reported OWC. Now, our total working capital for the year dropped to 1.3 billion compared to 1.6 at the end of 2014. This amounts to 17.4% of annualized sales, but please note that this number includes a cash-related liability of joint ventures of 137 million, which, if you exclude that, would lead us to a normalized sales percentage of sales of 19.2%, which is still a favorable development versus last year. And to conclude, I would like to give a brief recap of our strategy 2018, which is on slide 23. So slide 23. In order to assist those who were not with us at our Capital Markets Day in November, we have added here a compilation of key slides that summarize the key messages of our Strategy 2018 and driving profitable growth. Over the next 3 years, we will focus on capturing the full potential of our business portfolio by improving the company's financial results. And as you see here, this has been translated in two headline financial targets: high single-digit annual EBITDA growth and high double-digit basis point annual ROCE growth. In order to achieve these targets, we have identified clear actions to enable growth, as well as launched very specific cost reduction and efficiency improvement programs. Next to that, we have stepped up our sustainability aspirations. We are adjusting our operation model, and we aim to extract full value from our pharma as well as our bulk chemical joint ventures in the coming years. And as said at the beginning of this call, our Outlook 2016 is fully in line with this strategy. And with this, I would like to open the floor for questions. Operator?
Ladies and gentlemen, in the Q&A session, you may register for the Q&A session by pressing star 1. So star 1 for questions. And the first question comes from the line of Ms. Nicola Tang of Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the questions. The first question is on vitamin E. Sorry to ask a question on it. In the past, I think you talked on the calls, you've talked about sort of healthy capacity utilization within the industry, or sort of improving capacity utilization. Can you give us an update on that? And also, I know last year you tried to put through some price increases which didn't in vitamin E, which didn't really work. Are there any sort of plans to do that this year for vitamin E? And maybe you could talk a little bit about whether there's a possibility to do that for vitamin A, as I know one of your competitors did that as well. And then just on the dividend being flat year on year, can you just sort of talk on the rationale for, you know, leaving it flat rather than increasing it? Thank you.
Okay, good morning, Nicola. Thank you very much. I'll answer the dividend one first, and maybe then let Fiker contribute to the call here on the vitamins. So in terms of the dividend, if you look at the earnings per share, the absolute earnings per share for the year, including both exceptionals, et cetera, you take it all loaded, we don't feel comfortable increasing the dividend in that context, because if you look at that level, the payout is substantial. Now, on the other hand, we have sufficient retained earnings and liquidity to maintain our dividend policy commitment of stable, preferably rising. So at this stage, we felt this was a cautious and appropriate level of dividend for 2015.
Yeah, and on the vitamins, indeed, the vitamin E went down, obviously, quite a bit during the year. You know there are potentially three smaller and two bigger Chinese manufacturers. The three smaller, one never started up. The other is more or less out of service, and the third one also very mediocre. But the two bigger ones are, although with substantially decreased profitability in full operation, and that made it also very complicated to increase prices. So the vitamin E prices are not increasing, as you see also in the fourth quarter. Now the comparison becomes different, of course, now if you will look to the first quarter or first half year 2016. The comparison becomes very easy compared with last year. So that's different than in 2015. But I don't see a price increase at this moment. Of course, if we see the opportunity, we will grab it. But I don't see it at this moment. Regarding the other vitamins, indeed, some of the vitamins are increasing in price, B5, vitamin A. Some others not, like vitamin E, vitamin C, etc. So it is a little bit a mixed bag. And I would say, overall, I will be careful to see a rise of vitamin prices. I would call it overall more flattish for us at this moment. And the reason is also that you should not look only to the spot prices, because our prices are more the longer-term prices, and we don't operate so much on the spot prices. And most likely, most of us follow the vitamin E prices and other vitamin prices via feed info. and that is more for the animal segment than for the human segment, where it could also be some differences, especially when you look to forms, etc. So I would call the total vitamin movements, vitamin E and others, rather stable than being very careful to call that increasing.
Okay, thank you.
Next question is from Mr. Neil Tyler of Redburn.
Good morning. Couple from me, please. Looking at the volume development in the nutrition business, on the human side, a couple of what looked like, probably aren't, but what looked like slightly conflicting comments from yourselves on the supplements and omega-3 in North America. You say you've done better, but then there's no market improvement. I suppose that's not necessarily a conflict, but I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about how your business has fared within the market in human. On the animal side, you refer to the timing of orders. Do we therefore need to be a little bit more cautious on volumes in animal in Q1? And then in pricing in the animal business, I wonder if you could help us understand what proportion of the price increase related to blend ingredients that don't attract any margin. And then finally, previously you've given some indication of the FX hedging and the impact of the roll-off into the year. I can't find that slide in the current presentation, so I wonder if you could help us on the impact of the hedges rolling off this year and any other comments you want to make on foreign currency. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. On the nutrition business, as you have seen, the organic growth over the whole year in animal health was very strong. Over the whole year, 8% volume growth in the fourth quarter, 7% volume growth. That is a stiff volume growth, and we had also a very good volume growth in the fourth quarter, maybe a little bit more than what we hinted in the third quarter, where it was also strong. And we saw in the last 2 weeks some orders being advanced. That's not always normal at the year end, by the way, by some of our customers. So, I don't know. I don't see a real weakening of the market, so I don't want to say that. But the fourth quarter in growth, in volume growth, 7%, 8% over the whole year, is a stiff volume growth. We mentioned in the Capital Markets Days that we expect the market to do around 5% and that we will do slightly better than the market. So I use that for the animal health as the longer-term growth rate. But I need to say, indeed, at this moment, we do very well in animal, but some cautiousness is always good there because the volume growth is pretty stiff. If you look to the prices, of course, you don't see any negative price, not over the year and not in the quarter, although there is a big negative pricing in the prices, and that is vitamin E, obviously. And that is compensated price-wise, not margin-wise, price-wise, by sourced-in materials in methionine and some others. And therefore you see the price flattish, but the price effect in total is obviously negative because the sourced in materials does not give you an additional profit. You sell it higher, you buy it higher, and the vitamin E, of course, has an immediate bottom line impact. Omega-3, indeed, if you switch to human health, in the fourth quarter we were back on the growth trajectory, which is, I think, very good, with 5% organic growth, 7% volume even. Now, you might say a better comparison compared with the fourth quarter of 2014, that's true. Nevertheless, we feel that we are getting human nutrition step by step back on track, although, indeed, we don't see a big improvement in omega-3 in the United States, but in some other markets we see, in China and some other markets, we see good growth. That gives a little bit the picture, and for human nutrition we have set to the future, what is it, the 3-4% growth we see as a long-term growth of that that market, and we will do slightly better, and we continue to aim on that. For next year, what will play a role, of course, is the growth in animal and human, and both back on the growth trajectory, and of course the whole nutrition improvement program, which we have running as well on the cost side. I hope that elucidates,
yeah,
and then the FX.
Neil, I'll take the FX question. I mean, obviously, it's a relevant topic as always. So firstly, what I would say is that we closed 2015 with broadly a 35 million benefit, which in Q4 basically was broadly a wash, if you remember the cumulative of the rest of the year. And now looking forward at next year, if we take actually today's exchange rates, we're expecting broadly a neutral impact. And what I'm saying today, I'm looking at maybe a dollar that's been, you know, versus the euro bouncing around quite a bit. But if we say a dollar at about 1.12 and a Swiss franc at about 1.10, so for us, obviously, the weakening dollar is bad news. The weakening Swiss franc is good news. But in fact, the picture becomes increasingly complicated for us as other geographies weigh heavier in the basket of currencies. And we also have to watch carefully the Brazilian real, as well as obviously the RMB, but the sterling, et cetera. So the rule of thumb that we provided previously and at the Capital Markets Day still holds. So broadly, the sensitivities are the same. But if I take today's exchange rates, including the hedges, by the way, we would see it as pretty much a wash at this stage.
That's helpful. Thank you. Can I just jump back? So on the animal pricing, the vitamin E effect, are you saying that if essentially it's about 100 million or just over, I think, if you sum up the numbers you provided for the year, negative price impact? So the sourced in ingredients is a number of a similar size on which you make very little margin. Is that the way to interpret your answer? Thanks.
And together with some other price movements of some other products. So the vitamin E price effect is correct what you calculate, and there are some other vitamins which have some price movements, some other products, not only vitamins, but I look also to enzymes and omega and all the stuff. And indeed, the substantial part of the plus in the pricing, not in the margin, in the pricing, was coming from in-source materials.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Thomas Gilbert of UBS.
Yeah, good morning, Geraldine, Dave, and Feike. Very dull set of questions because they're all financial housekeeping. Would you be able to provide directionally, or if you've got hard numbers, guidance for the following items for 2016? The financial result, and if you could break it between cash relevant interest and non-cash expenses such as pensions and hedging result. No, it's difficult, but if you can guide that, would be helpful. Also, in the cash flow statement, the cash interest result has been distorted by the settlement for the interest rate pre-hedges. If you can guide that line item for 2016, would be helpful. And then it gets more difficult. If you could also shed some sort of directional comment, at least on the net income of associates and the minorities line, the P&L, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, Thomas.
Hello.
I will try to partly accommodate you, but maybe not in full. So firstly, in terms of the financial expense, and I may not be able to guide you on the breakdown, but indeed what we saw this year was a bit higher than what we would expect as our usual trending. Some of the hedge results will not reoccur next year, so we're looking probably at about 120 million there.
That's P&L.
P&L. Now, yeah. The cash, I don't have it at hand right here to give you the breakdown, but we can help provide that. Now, in terms of the interest, that is pretty well flagged in our documentation because you see the footnote at the bottom of the cash flow, really showing that we had that one-time pre-hedge of the bonds at the start of the year of 130 million. So you can back that out already. What we're seeing as well is that we refinanced, about $1 billion this year in 2015 at more interesting interest rates, particularly on a cash basis. As were the previous bonds. So what you will see is a slightly lower number than that. So even if you back out the 130, will be a bit below. So quite a good picture.
But no more settlement charges due. So we can really look at the bonds and calculate the gross cost of debt, and that's the cash interest expense for 2016. Is that the right way to look at it?
From a cash point of view, that's correct. Now, don't forget that from an income statement point of view, we smooth the effect of the pre-hedge over the change of the bond.
Yep.
So your expense actually looks a bit higher, but on a cash out, it would be a fair approach. So that's fair enough. And your third question was about associates, and thank you for that one, because Q4 is a bit of an anomaly.
Yep.
So be careful. Here, the 50 million pre-exceptionals that we're showing as net income, of course, we don't provide all the details and we don't guide on this, but there were a fair number of one-off items in there, positive ones, whereas in the previous quarters, it was more the opposite, where they were carrying a number of one-timers costs, whether it be, preparation for IPO process, etc. So Q4 is not a representative quarter as far as we can tell. So I would not recommend multiplying that by four by a long way.
But the associates result is going to be positive going forward on a quarterly basis.
If you have a look at the full year, we will be trending, we believe, in the right direction from there, but we really can't guide more precisely than that.
And minorities is the other way around, presumably.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. James Knight of Exane BNP Paribas.
Morning. I've got a couple of questions. Firstly, on animal health, there's ever a fair degree of different views about the way markets are looking in 2016. I wondered if I could tempt you to give a little bit of granularity in what you expect in terms of species and major regions. So break down the outlook a little bit. And then secondly, on biomedical, how should we think about that in 2016? We obviously see the market, but how much of the issues you faced in 2015 are the patent issues that are now behind you? So just maybe some feel directionally of how we should model that in 2016. Thank you.
Yeah. On the biomedical, we had some of the old contracts and the patent issues still in 2015, and we see some consolidation in the biomedical customer field, which we serve, which was not a help in 2015. We do not expect that to be a negative influence in 16, so we expect in 16 to be back again on a good growth mode and also the years thereafter. The market is not growing with the very high double digit as it was growing before, but it is still growing with firm single digit percentages, and we take in a strong position there. So I expect continued growth in 2016 and onwards for biomedical, and leaving the history behind us. On animal, we have a very strong position animal, and I believe also that the market will do well and continue to do well, and also our position and growth in that market. I only raise some carefulness not to put an 8-9% volume growth forever like we saw this year. That would, of course, not be in line with what the end market is doing. But a firm growth in the different species, and as you know, chicken and pig are traditionally our strong segments, but we got also a stronger position in beef and other segments, also due to the acquisition of Tortuga in Brazil. So we are active in almost all species. I would like to add also aqua. And we have a pretty rich portfolio together with our forward integration to the premixes all over the world. So I expect us to grow in all regions. Of course, Brazil, total economy is doing a little bit worse than before. We all know that. But if I look to our total global animal business, I expect continued good growth of that business.
Just a quick follow-up, including in China, you expect good growth in poultry and pigs?
Yeah, the urbanization in China for the time being, as we look to it, is going to continue. The development of the middle class is going to continue. And of course, the exports are a little bit lesser out of China, and maybe economic growth due to investments are less. But there is still good underlying growth in China, which keeps us still confident on what we can do in the nutrition space in China.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Mutlu Gundogan of ABN AMRO.
Yes, good morning, everyone. The first question is on vitamin A. We saw that BASF announced a price increase of 10%, but we haven't seen anything from you guys. So can you tell us why that is? And then the second question, just sticking with the vitamins. I know there's a lot of news coming out of Feed Info, but I also understand that the Chinese government has forced certain vitamin producers to stop production due to the G20 summit in September. So can you tell us what kind of impact you expect from that on your business? The third question is a nitty-gritty one on the corporate line. Can you quantify the negative impact from the warehouse fire in Camelot? And then finally, also a small question on the associates. I know you don't want to talk much about it, but can you at least give the clean income excluding the one-offs?
Okay. On the vitamins, I mean, what I think is not wise to do is to go in a real granular way, although many of you would like it that we do that. So what is the price movement of vitamin A, B, C, D, etc.? What is it in human, what it is in animal, what is it in different geographical regions. By far, the two biggest vitamins are vitamin E and vitamin C, and those prices at this moment are relatively stable, and I will be careful pushing them up in expectations at this moment. Some of the other vitamins have some positive momentum, but not all. Some, again, the opposite effect. So as an average, I would say I don't see a declining trend, but I would be careful with the upward anticipation. Of course, we try to move up prices, and if we see the opportunities, we will do so. And we need to be careful of announcements of us and others on price increases on the spot market and the real prices we all book in our business. There's always a difference between those. Camelot and Associates, Geraldine.
Yeah, sure. So the Camelot fire, you see the impact for us there in the corporate activities, and that's because of our reinsurance structure that we've got in place. Now you can estimate broadly what we've picked up in 15 is 10 million linked to that. So that's on the Camelot fire. And when it comes to associates, you know, it's a very difficult picture to try and break down because we really, at net income, you've got all the switching in the different financing structures, lots of ups and downs, et cetera. So really, I'd much rather give an overall comment that if you take the overall full year 50, we will be trending in the right direction there, but we really are not in a position to provide more detail.
Does that answer your questions, Mr. Gundogan?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Mr. Martin Rödiger of Kepler Cheuvreux.
Thank you, and good morning. Also, three questions from my side. First, on the depreciation and amortization charges, which were quite high in Q4, 146. I understand this is due to impairments, so write-downs. What is the underlying D&A charge in Q4 which you can use modeling going forward? The second question is on human nutrition. You mentioned markets in Europe and Asia performed well. Maybe you can shed some light on that, the background here. And thirdly, a nitty-gritty question on Innovation Center. You said you had a license income from biosuccinic acid in Q4. Is that an income which we may see also in the future? And maybe you can give us a hint on the quantity of that license income.
Okay, maybe I'll start with your first one. Hello, Martin. Indeed, what we have is, as you know, our exceptionals of a certain scale are ring-fenced in the exceptional line, but we also did some clean-outs of some of the intangibles related, I have to say, particularly to R&D, in the various units, and so that has increased our Q4 amortization and impairments, which is the word that's missing there, in the quarter. So if you want to normalize it, you can probably normalize it by about 15 to 20, would be a more normal level.
On the Biosuccinic, indeed, we have given a license. The income stream is, of course, dependent on how much the licensee will sell. And, of course, the whole development of the Biosuccinic market is going a little bit slower due to the low oil prices, and therefore the low prices of Succinic derived from oil than anticipated before. So I would call the figures modest at this moment. But, of course, if the market would take up, then we have not only our own income stream, but also from licenses. But I would call that more towards the future. The human health, yeah, we are being pretty aggressive and firm on getting our human health business back on the growth track. We know that, especially in the U.S., we had some setback over second part 14 and 15, and we are pushing heavily in the whole world. In the U.S., with our eye health business, which is doing very, very well at this moment, and we see also continued growth opportunities for that in 16 and in the future, but also in the other regions. And we made some managerial changes in the course of 2015, in the beginning of the year, and I think we see that we are coming step by step back on the growth trajectory for human health. And indeed, like you said, not only in the US, but especially also in Europe and Asia.
Just for getting better understanding, what is the driver for the strong performance in Europe and Asia?
It is not only market, it is also especially our position in those markets. I've said before also at the Capital Markets Day, I think we missed a part of the market growth in the beginning of 2015 and the end of 2014, and we are strongly reversing that.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Ms. Rachel Castle of Goldman Sachs.
Hi, it's actually Jaideep Pandya from Goldman Sachs. A couple of questions, yeah. First of all, just wanting to understand your 2016 guidance. If I just listen to your comments on vitamins, it seems like you're expecting stable pricing and sort of stable-ish FX. You underlying grew about 10% ex vitamin E in 2015, and doesn't seem that you're particularly negative in any of your end markets. So if I just sort of think of cost savings that are supposed to come in nutrition in 2016 and assume underlying growth similar for 16 versus 15, you should grow more than double, or you should go double digit in nutrition. So what am I missing really here? So that's a first question. And then maybe you can also sort of give us some color on performance materials. What do you expect here, given you had pretty good margin development in 2015? So how much of that is sustainable? And just finally, a question on vitamin E, which I'm sort of struggling with is, you know, we've sort of seen a roughly 25 million number for headwind all throughout 2015. Although vitamin E pricing on a year-on-year basis, albeit spot at least, has, you know, delta has sort of shrunk as we've progressed in 2015. So can you just tie that in, how, you know, on a year quarterly basis, this minus 25 million charge doesn't fluctuate? Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Once again, I start with the vitamin E. The vitamin E prices I see relatively stable at this very moment. That is what I can say. Over the year, we have seen some movements, of course, of the prices down already in the beginning of the year. That works in our books, of course, also with a gradual movement because we do not operate so much on the spot market, but have more contracted prices. So there is always a delay up and a delay down in our business. You should calculate that. But at a comparison basis now, I do not expect, if the prices remain as they are, I do not expect we talk a lot about vitamin E pricing in 2016. Unless, and I don't see a big risk of prices going further down, to be honest. I don't see that. The smaller one, like we anticipated, are really into problems or out of service. The two bigger Chinese competitors next to BASF, and those are the four players then, are in operation. But, of course, they with a strongly declined profit as they had before. If we see moments of price increase opportunities, of course, we will grab that. But I found that too early or too much speculation now to go into that. Your first question was, you wanted to make me, if I understand, a more specific outlook phrase and specify that for nutrition, then I would specify that for materials at the same moment, and then make a distinction between animal and human. What we did in the outlook is go back to the capital markets days and what we said then, and said we will stick to that. And what are the contributing factors? It is not so much the FX, it is not so much the vitamin prices itself. It is, of course, the organic growth in animal health, in a human health. It's also the organic growth in performance materials, although we need to see that in the economic context of today, the volume growth in performance materials will, of course, be slightly more difficult than in nutrition. And then it is our so-called self-help programs, both in nutrition and corporate-wide in our global support functions. And those elements will drive the increase of EBITDA in 2016 and the increase of our return on capital employed. And as we said, we absolutely committed and aim to deliver those targets as we have set before. I don't know whether that provides the help that you want, but it is the answer a little bit.
No, thank you. Just maybe one short follow-up. On cost savings, what sort of net retention should we bake in for this year and the years forward, ex inflation? Thanks.
Yeah, so as we explained at the Capital Markets Day, the way we run these improvement programs is we very much focus on our baseline 2014 and what we can do from there. So our commitments and the very detailed action plans are versus that. Now, what actually ends up on the bottom line depends on a number of other factors, and that's where we do not commit to a particular retention rate. Now, the drive is there. We are, if you remember the phasing of the program, we're looking at a 70, 80 million additional contribution of those programs in terms versus 2015. So it's not an immaterial number, but there are too many moving parts to really provide a clear, firm guidance on how much ends up to the bottom line. And that's why we wrap it into one overall target.
Okay, thank you so much.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Laurence Alexander of Jefferies.
Good morning. Can you give a little bit more detail on regional trends in infant nutrition and also your strategy for the resins business and how you can maybe improve results there?
The infant formula, we see most growth rates in Asia, secondly in Europe, and maybe certainly in the US, because part we have already high level of penetration of our infant formula business in the US, and the level of penetration of our ingredients is lesser in the other areas. Although I need to say that the US by far is the biggest market. On the resins strategy, we focus very much on the specialty products like our waterborne, but also functional materials for coatings for optical fibers and those kind of things. So what we did over the last year also is focusing very much on the specialty products, and we expect both in engineering plastics and in resins to benefit from that in 2015. If I take engineering plastics also there, the polymer business, the PA6 business, is of course a more difficult business to grow at that margin-wise, volume-wise. But the compounds and the specialties is much easier, and we are much better positioned there to grow that business well also in 2016. overall, to be honest, I look, of course, we are not immune for the macroeconomic developments around us, but with the portfolio we have created in nutrition, I see continued organic growth. Animal doing very well, also this moment. Human coming back on our growth track. I don't see any decline of any vitamin prices, which should worry us. And in the material business, the whole specialty profile which we have created should be able to see continued growth there. So I think the statement we aim to deliver on our targets is I can only repeat firmly that statement.
And just to clarify, is price mix positive for infant nutrition?
Price mix positive, how are we?
So you're asking if the price mix is positive for human nutrition?
Not for Q4. I just mean it's the trend for 2016, or are you having success with the contract rollovers, or are you having to give up price to do that?
Yeah, of course, if we see price increase movements, we will grab that. But I was a little bit careful in the call not to speculate and anticipate on too much vitamin price increasement and not to go to the granularity of all the different vitamins, neither in animal as in human. If you want to turn it to the opposite, is that statement which I just made contained that some cautiousness that I see declines? No, I don't see any big concerns or declines like we had in the past. So don't read it like that, but I will be careful on any speculation on the other side.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Ms. Evgenia Molotova of Berenberg.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my questions. Just one clarifying on omega-6 and infant nutrition. As far as I understand, you have a second generation of omega-6, which also allowed you to considerably reduce costs. So even if the price mix is negative, it shouldn't affect EBITDA margins, if you could confirm that. The second question is on head of human nutrition. Would you have any new appointments in this area? What is the strategy, medium term? And the third question on probiotics in animal feed. How do you see this category growing? And again, as far as I understand, you have a leadership position in this area. And recently, Novozymes launched new probiotic together with Adiseo. How do you see this market developing going further?
Okay. On the omega-3, you are spot on, indeed. We see improved, maybe over time to keep our market, we see some declining prices, but not declining margins for us due to new strains we are going to introduce. So there you're right. Even if you see in the omega-3 a negative price trend, you will not see a negative margin trend due to exactly the effect you mentioned. In human nutrition, can we expect further top management announcements? Yes, most likely in due time, further strengthening that group also on the top. And on probiotics, both in human and in animal, very promising. In human, of course, we have a very strong position also towards the B2C market with Culturelle of our eye health business. I think it's one of the biggest brands in the world, even on the human health probiotics. But also in animal, we see this as a very interesting growth market. Indeed, like you mentioned, some of our competitors see the same. But we think that we have a strong position here, and we will grow their business, indeed.
Great. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Charlie Webb of Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, hi there. It's actually Paul Walsh from Morgan Stanley. Afternoon, or sorry, morning rather. I'm getting ahead of myself. guys. A couple of questions. Most of mine have been answered, but just some clarifications. Geraldine, just on the D&A charges that you referred to before, can you just give a guidance as to what you think that D&A charge is going to be in 2016, given the discrepancy between EBITDA and EBIT in the fourth quarter? And my second question was around the guidance again. Sorry to come back to that, but just trying to understand the different moving parts. I think the insinuation is 8% EBITDA growth year on year in accordance with the 2018 strategic guidance, but you're saying currency is a wash, vitamins are essentially a wash. If I assume you see further normalization in PM just because of the spreads, and I think FICA made reference to volumes being more challenging, that business ends up maybe down year on year. You've got an awful lot to make up in nutrition, about 100 million or so to hit that growth target, which on my maths would probably be around a 50% flow through if you do 5 or 6% organic growth. So just any sort of additional guidance points on that would be helpful. Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Okay, hi, Paul. On your first one, really, as I said, we had a one-timer in Q4, but you can expect broadly, there's no big shifts, so I'm not expecting to see next year something materially different on depreciation amortization. If anything, maybe trending down a little bit. So that's fine. And really, from a guidance point of view, listen, we're quite clear that we are guiding to the high single-digit EBITDA growth, and we will not be backing into the different moving parts. Now, most of the statements, I think we have covered the different parts in over the different questions. So I don't think it really would be appropriate here to try and provide any more details than that.
And can I just ask a follow-up on vitamin E? Talking about the sort of lag in contract pricing, does that mean you start with a deficit on vitamin E in the first half and then a positive in the second half, assuming sequentially stable pricing from here? Is that how to interpret it?
Why is that? Sorry, help me. I missed the rationale here.
Oh, sorry. In terms of the sequential movements in vitamin E pricing last year, did they get worse as we move through 2015, such that as we move into 16, you're still behind before the second half potentially sees you recovering it, if you see what I mean.
That's true, but I expect, if you look to the total 2016 and compare that with 15, the total impact difference between 15 and 16 in vitamin E is minimal in the total year. It's a little bit more in the first half than the second half, you're right. But it is, of course, of a totally different order of magnitude than last year. So I don't want to neglect it, but yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. We're running out of time, so maybe one short last question, yeah, a single one, and then we have to conclude. So, operator, the last one, please.
Okay, last question comes from the line of Mr. Patrick Lambert of Raymond James.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Faker. Geraldine. So just one question. On the nutrition bridge, the 7% volume growth, could you help us in terms of splitting that into third-party products growth versus your own products growth? That's the way I look at margins, too. So if you could help us split that growth between these two categories. Thanks.
Most is our own product growth. So it's not a different mix than it was before. It is not that we are growing now faster our sourced-in products or our own products. The growth is in the whole arena, so the mix between sourced in and our own products is not different. So the growth is equally spread. The only thing is that of the sourced in, the prices are higher with the same margins, and that compensates when you look to the pricing. The decline of the vitamin E pricing, but that's a little bit artificial because that decline is there.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, so blending going as fast as your own product.
Yep. Okay. Great. Okay, that means we have to conclude now the Q&A session. Geraldine, do you want to make some closing remarks?
Thanks, Dave. First of all, of course, thank you to all of you for taking the time and your interest in DSM. As we've said, Q4 has been an encouraging quarter, which enabled us to close 2015, which we consider to be pretty solid. And going forward, we will focus on delivering the targets that we explained to you at the Capital Markets Day last year in November. And with that, I wish you a good day.
Okay, thank you, Geraldine. This concludes our conference call for today. Thank you very much for your attention and your questions. If you have any further questions or need background information, you know where to find Investor Relations. And with that, I hand the call back to the operator.